Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. I am your host, David Hayes. And, you know, someone this week said, hey, you work on the radio, don't you? And I said, no, I don't really work on the radio. I'm actually a real financial advisor that meets with real people and deal with real issues. I just do the radio thing for fun on the side. Rod Holloway is my guest today. He's going to be joining us for the Big Investment Show, the first show of each month. We talk about investments, and wow, this is like so timely. We have all the Greece stuff going on. We have the Fed stuff going on. Eric Giesler will be joining us too to kind of navigate through what the things you should be concerned about, and maybe things you shouldn't. We'll give you some of our thoughts on where things are right now. But before that, let's take a little time for news of the week, of course, brought to you by our new book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults age 50 and over, available on all major online retailers. U.S. stocks did go lower on Thursday following Europe. The U.S. stocks swung way down on Thursday as the impasse between Greece and its creditors dragged on. The Dow Jones lost about 160-plus points. S&P was also off, and so was the NASDAQ. In Greece, Greece pulled the emergency cord, I guess, on Thursday in its bailout talks, opting to bundle together four payments due to the IMF this month on June 30th. And this is a course that was last followed 3 decades ago by Zambia. And I also saw that here that Greece owes its creditors, the IMF, the European Central Bank, and the European Commission, a total of 1.6 billion, that's with a B, euros, by the end of the month. This was that rule of bundling them up that it was adopted back in 1970. Member countries could ask to roll together separate payments due in the same month to address, quote, the administrative difficulties of making multiple payments in a short period of time, the IMF said. You know, as you look at the market, June is ranked 11th out of the 12 months as the worst months. This is from By the Numbers. For the average total performance for the S&P 500 index, that's over the last 25 years. Only the month of August has historically produced a poorer average stock performance than June. The three summer months combined, June, July, and August, have produced an average loss of 0.3% over the last 25 years. However, the last few years, last 3 years, we've actually seen gains during the summer months. You know, a lot of folks, too, are acting like gas prices are so correlated to oil prices, and they are, but out of the Department of Energy, we saw that 63% of the cost of gasoline is driven by the cost of crude. Distribution and marketing makes up 16%, taxes 13%, and refinery charges 8% make up the remaining cost. And did you see this out of Bloomberg? Three reasons why women should actually lead household retirement planning. So I guess you should say, thou shalt look to the wife to drive retirement planning. Well, they say here the stakes are higher for women. Basically, 52% of women between the ages of 75 and 84 are widowed compared to just 17% of men, which means they're living longer. They also say women might be a little more farsighted. Retirement planning is a hard exercise and delayed gratification. Some studies show that women are more naturally inclined to be long-term thinkers. In fact, when Russell Investments asked 343 financial advisors which gender tends to be more of a long-term planner, women won by 56%. Women are also more patient and not as overly confident when it comes to investing. 15 years ago, there was a group of investment guys that got together and analyzed 35,000 household trading accounts and found that men nearly traded 50% more frequently than women. They also pointed out that the overconfidence as a behavior tick for male investors caused this. The kicker, the researchers found that women actually beat the men by 1% on average. And finally, of course, the big NBA finals kickoff in Cleveland will play Golden State for the NBA title. It actually starts here on Thursday night. The city of Cleveland last won a national professional sports championship in 1964, 51 years ago. That's when the Browns won the NFL title before the Super Bowl era. But did you know that San Diego actually has the second longest U.S. drought without a pro sports championship, having last won an AFL football title in 1963 or 52 years ago? So who should we feel more sorry for? Those poor people in that wonderful San Diego area or those poor saps up in Cleveland. I'm going with Cleveland. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we'll be joined by Eric Giesler, the fixed income manager at our office, CFCI. We'll be talking with him about what the big deal is in Greece. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's the Big Investment Show. Rod Holloway is in-house, and Eric Giesler is on the phone. And, you know, as we think about what's happening in the markets right now, it's all about Greece. All the talk is about Greece. And, of course, you can go back into 2008 when the markets were imploding and Greece was at the center of the European debt crisis. And then to ward off the sovereign debt default, Greece accepted loans from the European folks and said, we will do things to make things better, which were called austerity measures, massive cuts to government spending designed to bring the national debt under control. And then the Greek folks didn't like that too much, so they elected a pretty extremist group that ran on the fact that, hey, we're not going to do this. And then they refused to reinstate the austerity measures and basically don't want to even pay their debts anymore. And Eric Giesler joins us now on the phone. And Eric, that's a little brief history on where they are today. And I guess, how's it working out so far for those folks who have, by the way, outstanding olive oil, great gyros, and the baklava? I love the baklava, Eric.
Well, I don't think it's any different than it was yesterday or even to say where it was a year ago. And I'm not quite sure, other than on principle, why it matters, because the European markets have actually tried to drive the value of Greek debt and any of their economic assets. They've driven them almost to zero. The stocks for the banks in Greece are some of the most liquid. It's like every day somebody wants to take a bet on the direction of this situation being resolved. But I'm not sure, other than on principle, that the Europeans really want to have anything be done that is going to end this crisis. Because, as you rightly pointed out, when Greece has signed commitments and been asked to live up to them, they've just elected another set of socialists that don't want to live up to those commitments, and they go back to the EU and ask to have the terms changed. So, you know, I'm not sure that these government commitments mean anything, and if something happened tomorrow, that I don't know that you would have a net effect in the market that would even matter.
And of course, the Greeks have said, we're going to bundle up these payments and make them all at the end of June, which is 1.6 billion euros, a lot of money for folks that don't have any. And Rod Holloway is here with us as well. And Rod, I think when we're talking about the markets, it's not the known that we're so much scared about, it's the unknown. And this has been on the plate for a long time. So to me, it's not any real new news.
No, it definitely isn't. And in the area that is my focus, which is stocks, you know, the media will pin a daily sell-off potentially on negative Greek news.
Yeah.
But in all reality, stocks aren't moving because of what's going on in Greece. It may add some volatility in the very short run. It's going to impact probably interest rates, which Eric can attest to far more. You know, but stocks are driven by fundamentals, mm-hmm. you know, and what Greek ends up doing with the debt obligations that they have doesn't affect the fundamentals of the companies on the public exchanges, other than, like I said, maybe a little bit of short-term volatility. Of course, interest rates and what interest rates do and bonds does have an effect on stocks, but I don't think that what goes on in Greece is going to have any sort of long-lasting impact on equities.
So, Eric, the average guy out there, and, you know, I see lots of them every day, as you know, and they walk in and they're afraid about, well, they're afraid of their shadow, quite honestly, when it comes to investing. Should they be overly concerned about this? You know, I've been talking people off the fence, and I think the real worry to me would be that if Greece was able to pull off some kind of a hat trick of sorts, that Portugal and then ultimately Spain, which is the big dog, could follow, and that would be the domino effect that could really take down that entire euro area.
Well, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is, as I've said, the market has already priced in the event of Greece not paying. They've run their stock prices down about as low as they possibly can. The credit risk is enormous in Greece. The debt holders have already taken huge haircuts. I don't think that there's a contagion in the sense that, because if this goes down, Spain goes down or Portugal goes down. It only has a lasting effect is that if there is a precedent of a country like Greece playing this child's game of do over. We don't like what we did the first time. Can we do it over again? And I don't think that the rest of the European Union is going to accept that from too many folks. So I don't see it as a contagion in the sense that if they don't pay their debt tomorrow, I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anyone. And what Spain or Portugal, or they were often referred to as the pigs, right?
That's right.
I don't think that that's going to follow suit. Yeah. I think it's just become an impossible situation because, from a political perspective, if the people didn't like the deal that was being cut with Europeans, they just elected the next guy that would step up to the plate and tell them exactly what they wanted to hear.
Yeah, so. Well, and folks who are listening about the reaction to the markets in the Spain and the Portugal and, of course, the big Greece bailout, the markets will tend to move on speculation, which is the speculation that Greece will default, but then will adjust on reality. So if it's already adjusted to the fact that Greece was likely to default, then there shouldn't be a lot to worry about as far as another overreaction to that. And there may be maybe in the short run, maybe a couple days, but overall we don't think it's too much to worry about right now. So that's something you can check off your list. We're going to come back, Eric Giesler. He's our fixed income manager. We're going to talk about interest rates. The ECB came out and vocally said to the Fed, hey, maybe you ought to hold off on this rate increase idea for quite some time. So we want to talk about when we expect rates to finally start rising and if they already are. In fact, the capital markets appear that they've been moving up for the last, for a while. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, talk interest rates with Eric Giesler of CFCI. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I am your host, David Hayes. Rod Holloway is in-house. He's our equity portfolio manager over at CFCI, and our fixed income guru is on the phone, Eric Giesler. And, you know, if we look at the first quarter gross domestic product, which is the growth in the economy, actually went negative. Now, that's not a big surprise. Most people thought because of the port shutdowns and the cold winter that we would experience something similar that we had last year when we had massive contraction during the first quarter, only to come back and have a huge second quarter. Right now, estimates are all over the board for what second quarter will look like. But one thing that I found very interesting, because no one predicted last year that interest rates would go down. Everyone thought they would go up. And we started off the year with the 10-year Treasury, Eric, around 1.6%. I think mid-January to February is around 1.65. It ended today around 2.4. I mean, that's a huge move. I mean, what is that telling us?
Well, I think it's telling us that there's a whole lot of volatility in 2015 in the bond market, and I think that we can agree that it's also there's been a lot of volatility in the equity market. I think from a bond perspective, I think the bond markets are demonstrating that they want more risk compensation for the risks that they're taking in owning the bonds, and so they're driving those prices lower or yields up, I don't think that I think there's a big debate on whether there's inflation in the markets based on the statistics that you just talked about. But I think it's just that the market thinks that they need to be compensated for their risk a little bit, and we've gone a number of years without being compensated for that risk. And I think that the volatility is here to stay. So. You know, we think we've had a lot of volatility. What we've gone up about 20%,
right?
In rates. Well, in 3 days, just since the 1st of June, in Germany, they've gone up 50%. So it's going on all over the world.
Let's talk about the European folks and the International Monetary Fund. They put a statement out just today, I believe, that asked or suggested that the Federal Reserve here in the U.S. kind of hold back on raising interest rates. What's that for? What are they telling us to do? Why are they telling us to hold back on rate increases?
Well, because they think that it's actually helping the euro. And therefore, it looks like it helps their economies to be able to export more goods into the rest of the world, and so they like it. And they would prefer that we continued a policy that made their markets attractive. So, I think it's nothing any different than our Fed does is look out for number one, right?
Sure.
Where they want to do the best things for their economies.
Now, when it comes to mortgage rates, of course, you've been in that market for years and years and years as a bond buyer. When the 10-year Treasury goes up, that tends to correlate pretty heavily with mortgage rates. I was looking at the 30-year mortgage rate on Yahoo.com, and it showed it over 4%. We haven't seen over 4% for a while. What do you think the outlook is for mortgage rates? Because the market for housing is pretty hot here locally, a lot of people getting mortgages, and I know people have asked me this week, should I hold off and wait a little longer before I pull the trigger and actually anchor down a 30-year mortgage? What do you think, E?
Well, I think that they should not be willing to play the game of looking for the perfect opportunity. We're going to be in a volatile market, I think so, at least in through the fall. And because of the uncertainty that the Fed has shown, the uncertainty that we're seeing in our economic numbers, if they can afford the 4%, I think they should take advantage of it. I don't think that somebody's payment is going to be drastically affected by I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 basis points.
Yeah, when I was answering that question this week, I did the calculation, ended up being $22 more per month on a pretty substantial mortgage. So I don't think you want to play those games.
Yeah, I don't think it's been interest rates that have held back housing and that part of the economy. Maybe there has been some difficulty for the home buyer to enter because of down payments and that sort of thing. But I don't think it's been interest rates that it has either helped or hindered that particular aspect of our growing economy.
So let's talk real quick before we let you go about the long term projections on interest rates. You know, when does the Fed finally start to move rates? Of course, that's going to be the overnight borrow between banks. And then how does that really affect the average person out there when they're looking at, you know, bond rates and how that affects the equity prices? And you know, I've been telling folks that rates don't have to go up. You know, you look at Europe and rates are low, and you have international investors that are looking for a place to park their money. The U.S. Treasury still looks pretty attractive. You have Japan that's had low interest rates for 20 years with a terrible economy, aging demographics both in Europe and Japan. So if you were telling someone, Eric, the reality about interest rates, what would that reality be?
Well, first of all, that the Fed has very little effect on their lives in any form or fashion. As we've seen here recently, we've seen that rates have gone up, and I think that's because the market expects to be paid for their risk. I think one of the more interesting things, and do I think rates are going to go up another 100 basis points? No, I don't, because there is too much demand still out there for assets. Having said that, I think 2015 is going to be different because of the high correlation between equities and stocks. That correlation has grown to be about a 20-year high, that when rates have moved up, equities have kind of not necessarily fallen off the table, but they've certainly gone down. And I think that speaks more to diversification, that you want to have more diversification as long as there is that high correlation between the two.
Eric Giesler has been our guest calling in. He is the fixed income manager of CFCI, and he's the guy that makes me look good, along with Rod Holloway. So, Eric, I appreciate you taking the time, and I'll be talking with you probably tomorrow.
Thank you, everybody, and have a good evening, Rod.
All right.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Thanks, Eric. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will start to shift over to the equity side of the world as Rod Holloway joins us here at live in the studio to talk about the stock market. May ended in the black, and of course the old saying is, sell in May, go away, come back again some other day. I never know exactly what day that is, but we'll go put that in perspective. And of course, the months of June, July, and August have historically been some of the worst times to be in the equity market. So we're going to be talking with Rod about that. And also, is it a good time to revisit your risk tolerance and the purpose for your money? So we got a lot to talk about and only about 30 minutes to do it all in. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. It is the investment show. Rod Holloway is still hanging out with me. Of course, if you miss any of the show and you want to hear it in its entirety, Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, right after the Bloomington Review, and then always on WGCLRadio.com. Speaking of the Bloomington Review, our good friend Jim Inman Jr. stepped into the studio, and anytime he steps in, we want to get him on the show because, Jimmy, we love you.
Well, I love you, too, and I came to check the Taco Bell weather puddle, and make sure everything was good to go.
And just besides a little air-conditioned condensation, I think we're in pretty good shape.
We are. So I just came to hang out for a few minutes.
We've seen a lot of funny things over the years, and Jim, this is camp out weekend, just so you know, Hayes Boy camp out weekend.
First of all, there are things that we cannot share of what we've seen out this window, so we'll not go over that. And I appreciated the shout-out on Wednesday morning.
On the Glasses show, yes. Yeah, because for years, the family would go to West Boggs Park, beautiful West Boggs Park in Lagodi, Indiana. And I would go to the High Point there at the Shelter House and do the hour-long Saturday morning rendition. Of course, now Thursday nights, I don't have to do that on Saturday morning. But we had a lot of fun for a lot of years, and Jimmy stepped in to say hello. And of course, Hot Rod is here.
Yes.
As the investment guru.
A couple times.
Once or twice. And I will say, as Greece has obviously been in the news, Jim, we made a what? Greece, the country
Greece,
of
the
Greece.
Country. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see my...
See, since you've moved out of the world of investments and out of finance, you have totally lost it. The country of Greece has been in the news a little bit.
Yes.
And we were talking about how fond we are of their olive oil. How fond we are of the gyros and the baklava. Mm-hmm. So what could be so bad with Greece? Do you not agree with that statement?
I do agree.
So what the heck's wrong? If that's only here's what's wrong. 25% of people under the age of like 30 are all unemployed. That's the problem, Hot Rod.
That creates a big problem.
You need to eat more baklava.
Okay.
And then that will bail out Greece. And in fact, Doug Hughes, next week, Doug is going to Europe. I don't know if you know that or not, but Doug went to Europe many, many years ago with his father. His father turned 70, so they're going back to Europe. Next Thursday night on this show, we will have a live correspondent from Athens, Greece. His name is Douglas Hughes.
Really?
And I'm sure it will be extremely entertaining.
Okay. Well, I think it's a six-hour difference from Indiana to London.
We
so
talked
it's probably
about
another
that.
7 or 8 for Greece. So welcome aboard.
And it's forward, not backwards.
Okay.
So if it's
so
6
it'll be
o'clock,
early morning.
It will be. But he promised that he would get up and be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and he will be calling in. So what are the odds on that, Rod? If you were putting odds on him calling in from Athens, Greece at midnight, 50-50?
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll try really hard to fulfill his agreement, but Doug's not a guy that stays up really, really late.
No, he's not. No. So I'm putting a 50-50 chance, but we're putting a lot of pressure on you, Doug, if you're listening. I know you are. To pull through, because that's going to be an extremely entertaining segment.
I'm sure if we hear any of that wonderful Greek music in the background also, we'll only get about 60 seconds.
Or the crunch of that baklava.
Yes.
Or something like that. So, hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll start back with Hot Rod and the shift to equities again. The May ended in the black, and, of course, the months of June, July, and August have typically not been that hot. So we'll get off baklava, we'll get off gyros and olive oil, and move on, Jim.
Okay.
Good to see you, man.
You too, man.
We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It is the investment show. Hot Rod Holloway, the portfolio manager, equity specialist over at CFCI, is with me. And, You know, Rod, typically, you know, May can be a little bit volatile from a historical perspective. It did end in the black, not by much, but it did. But the months of June, July, and August typically aren't the best times to be in the market. We've got a lot of stuff going on. Feds talk, we have the Greece talk. Should people be really concerned about this summer, or is it a time where they should just rethink why they're investing, what the purpose is of their money, and maybe think about some, you know, rebalancing or risk management
ideas? You
know,
I think regardless of the calendar, you should always be thinking about the purpose behind your investments and whether or not your allocation matches that purpose in your time horizon. But by no means should you do it based on any of these so-called calendar anecdotes, sell in May and go away, the Santa Claus rally, the January effect, all of these things that go on. Because the reality is, you know, and this is something, if you go back and you read some studies being done on it, it's extremely hard to know in the sell in May and go away exactly the date you should sell and exactly the date you should get back in.
Well, in case in point, the last 3 years have not been too bad.
No, they haven't been bad. And the reality is, we're not talking about the summer months or a 20 or 30% sell-off. You know, we're talking about, okay, they're down slightly. There's typically not a ton of volume during the summer months.
According to By the Numbers, the three summer months of June, July, and August over the last 25 years have produced an average loss of just 0.3%.
Yeah.
I'll take that all day long.
Exactly. And that's the thing, because when you start attempting to manage your portfolio based on those different analogies or anecdotes due to the calendar, you're really, in effect, timing the market. And for what? To avoid a negative 0.03% loss? I mean, there's just no reason to avoid that. And that's why I tell a lot of people, you know, what you want to be scared of from the equity position in your portfolio is a recession, is something that potentially can have a much larger sell-off and potentially a longer sell-off than a few months in the summer being a little bit down. You know, a lot of that also used to have to do with, and I think that's why it's becoming less and less relevant, mm-hmm. It used to have to do with the fact the senior traders were taking their vacations.
Yeah,
the junior traders were given some very specific instructions. Hey, don't push the button unless this happens exactly. You know, so yeah, now with electronics and the mobile devices and the Wi-Fi connectivity that people have anywhere, they can very easily communicate with them junior traders and say, hey, let's go ahead and do this. So tomorrow morning when the market opens up, here's what I want you to buy or here's what I want you to sell. So yeah, I don't think it's quite the impact that it was before we were so connected.
Let's talk about oil. You know, last year at this time, it was $100 plus. It got down into the 40s. It's been settling in close to 60. What do you think that the opportunities are or the cautions there are with oil and what that means for the energy stocks? Because, you know, behind our closed doors of the office, the big play is let's get on some of these energy companies. I mean, good companies that were 30, 40 bucks a year ago are 10 bucks now. But that sometimes worries me when it looks to be very obvious. It sometimes isn't.
Sure. Once again, when we start talking timing, which is now the best time to get in? I don't know. That's too hard to predict. The key is find quality companies in the energy sector
that you think will be around for a long period of time.
And that's the key. What you just said, that will be around. There are a whole lot of companies out there that have had big sell-offs that are not going out of business. Now, are there some in the energy sector that will be put out of business because of how far oil dropped? Sure. But those are kind of obvious. I mean, those are small companies. When you look at their debt level, when you look at their free cash flow, when you look at their earnings per share, it can be kind of obvious that, oh, hey, things have to work out really, really well for them to survive. But there are plenty of energy companies out there that it's like, you know what, they're going to be around a long time. So whether or not they go down a little bit more, before they have a big rally, they trade sideways for another 3 to 6 months before they have, who knows? But what I do know is we're not getting ready to be done with fossil fuel.
No.
You know, we're not getting ready to move into solar-powered vehicles or windmills setting on top of our cars and powering ourselves via the wind. That's not about to happen. So we still have to have fossil fuel. Those companies are still going to take oil and natural gas out of the ground. They're still going to refine it and turn it into gasoline and diesel fuel and refined products that people are going to continue to buy. So, yeah, long-term, there are some opportunities in there, but don't, once again, try and time the market and think that you're going to jump in and make a whole bunch of money really fast and then you're going to get out and be conservative because, hey, I need this money in 3 months. Mm-hmm. If you need that money in 3 months, then don't go put it in any energy stocks.
We're going to take a break. You know, the one thing I have noticed, the diesel fuel is actually less expensive now than traditional gas, which years ago, you know, that's the way it always was, which makes sense because, you know, it just makes sense. Because refined, unrefined. So I'm happy because my lawnmower runs on diesel, and we've been mowing a lot of grass in my house the last month or so. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some risk management ideas with Rod Holloway. We're going to talk very simple things you can do within your 401k, within your IRAs, or wherever that your money may be to just kind of help you make good decisions. Because a lot of times when you do these risk management strategies, it can be the most counterintuitive thing that you actually do. And that usually means it's the right thing to do. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about a few of these ideas, and then we'll wrap up the show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We're going to talk a little bit about some risk management ideas when it comes to investments. It is the investment show. Next week, when Doug Hughes calls in from Athens, Greece, I swear he actually will be there. It's been rare that we've had an actual correspondent on the ground when things seem to be falling apart. But I can guarantee you that his dollar will buy much more than it would have about a year ago. In fact, probably around 20 to 30% more than it did. So he's pretty excited about that because Doug's known for being a little bit on the, how do you put this, frugal side. I was going to say tight, cheap. What
thrifty,
are some of the other thrifty?
Yeah.
There's a country song that we've decided we're going to write called "He Was Frugal Before Being Frugal Was Cool." You know, there used to be a song like that, "Country Before Country Was Cool." But as we talk about some of these risk management strategies, it's all in the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. Check it out. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. It's about $16 online. It's all in there. So if you hear something and you really are more of a visual guy or a gal than an audio guy, you know, or gal, ones that learn by hearing versus visual, you pick it up. It's, I think, will be in your mailbox in like a day or two. It's pretty cool how that works. Rod Holloway is with me, and we're talking about investments. You know, Rod, we've been on a really good run for several years, and people can get lulled into thinking that it's always going to be that way, and our memory is very short-lived in America. We forget things quickly, including crashes in the stock market. We forget, we have to be reminded of things like even terrorist attacks and you know, the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I mean, things like that have to be reminded to us because we're just not very in tune. And I think when it comes to investments, we're the same way. But I think a person ought to take a step back right now. It is summertime. The sun's shining. It's beautiful outside. And just do some very simple things to manage their risk. And Rod, number one is rebalancing. How easy can that be? In fact, most people can do it by just pressing one button on their 401ks.
Yeah, especially in your company retirement plan. The thing that is good about the rebalancing is there's a couple of things. We have been on a good run. And we've talked for a while that we're in the same camp as many other analysts, which we believe we're in a secular bull market. And secular bull markets do run on average 12 to 15 years. So we do have some room to run. That doesn't mean secular bull markets, there's never a given year or mm-hmm. a given month or a given quarter that's negative. It just means the overall trend for a long period of time is up. That being said, that does not mean that you should be banking on the secular bull market with 100% of your assets, you know, especially as you are nearing retirement or in retirement and needing some income. So rebalancing, looking at that, if you haven't rebalanced for a while, then I'm sure that your allocation that you started with, let's say you did a new allocation after the crisis in 08, somewhere in 09, maybe the beginning of 10, you reevaluated your risk tolerance after the big crash and said, okay, here's what I am. I'm a 60-40 investor. I'm a 50-50. The numbers really don't matter because it's different mm-hmm. for every single person. if you haven't rebalanced since you set that new allocation, I guarantee you're no longer at that same allocation. Matter of fact, the very next day after you set it, you were no longer at it, but you're going to be further out of it because we have had a very nice run since that bottom that was put in March of 2009 on the equity side. The other thing rebalancing does, not only does it make sense because if you haven't done it, you're taking on greater risk than what you had said when you redid your allocation after the crisis, because now equities have gone up. So now you have a higher percent of equities, therefore more risk in the portfolio. The other thing it does is it forces you to do what people really struggle to do,
right,
which is sell the things that have done really, really good and buy the things that haven't done so good. Nobody wants to do that. You hear it with your reviews when you sit down with your clients. And what do they come in and say when they want to look and talk about specific individual investments? Well, gosh, Dave, this investment did great last year. Man, this one just didn't do well at all. I was thinking we should sell that and let's put it all in the one that did great last year. Well, you know what? Especially in the mutual fund world, go look and see how many mutual funds are ranked number one every single year.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen. Now, they may stay up near the top. They may be very good, good manager. He's consistently one of the top in his peer group. But there isn't one that's number one every year. So to gravitate to who was number one last year isn't going to make you own who's number one again this year.
Yeah, and according to By the Numbers, since year end, the number one performing stock in the S&P during 2014 has actually fallen 12.4% year to date. While the number 500 performing stock in the S&P 500 during 2014, meaning that was the dog of it, is actually up this year 2.8. Many people think when we talk rebalancing, it's stocks to bonds to cash to real estate. But even within those sectors, you can look at
right.
stocks and see S&P 500, that's been the big golden child. But then you look at the Russell, you look at the international sectors. They haven't done quite so well. Small cap. And we talked about this at the end of last year and said,
yeah.
listen, this is a time to start rebalancing within your stock sectors. And that would have bode well for people had they done that.
Yeah, exactly right.
And hopefully some of them did.
Last year, you had double-digit returns in the large cap stocks. Small cap didn't perform very mm-hmm. well, up about 3%. International, negative, about 4 to 5%. Now you look year-to-date. Who's leading year to date? Well, it's mid cap. It's small cap. Europe has had a pretty nice rebound year to date. So yeah, if you looked in the rearview mirror at the beginning of this year and said, hey, you know what? These are the funds that did best for me. These didn't do so well. And you switch that around. You know what? S&P 500 year to date, this is through yesterday's close. You're up about 2.7%. Of course, we sold off today and I didn't see the exact percent at the end of the day, maybe close to a percent. So yeah, year to date, large cap S&P 500, you're up maybe 1.5, 1.75% mm-hmm. percent year to date. Small cap, you're looking more at probably about a 3 or 4% year to date positive return. And then if you start dialing down into sectors, you know, utilities did great last
oh, yeah.
year. 18-20% I think was what that sector was up last year. Now this year they're down about 7%. Biotech's up about 15%. So you cannot predict the future exclusively by looking into the past.
And international markets, as of the end of last week, were up almost 7% on average. So we talk about rebalancing needs to be within the different sectors, not just the asset classes. Another thing, Rod, that I think people need to understand, especially younger people that are putting money into their retirement accounts, let's say on a check-by-check basis, is the power of dollar-cost averaging. And that's simply, folks, that when the prices go up or down, you put the same amount of money in, and if the price is down, you buy more of those units or shares, and when the price is up, you buy a little less. But when the market's volatile, it kind of helps smooth out your ride a little bit. Now, I will tell you this, folks. If you're 60 years old and you've built a nice nest egg, there's not enough dollar cost averaging that can occur to prevent your portfolio from falling, and that's an asset allocation issue. But Rod, this idea of dollar cost averaging is something that people need to understand and embrace. Especially that means young people need to embrace volatility, not run from
right.
it.
Right, especially the young people contributing to their company 401k plan. That's the best way to do it. Don't try and time it. You know, in the long run, what you're putting in every single paycheck is such a small dollar amount to the type of accumulation you're going to have long term that if you time time that monthly contribution just right, it's not going to have a huge impact. Now, where the dollar cost averaging maybe isn't as valuable, the person who is retiring and he cashes out his 401k and it comes all in the form of a check, so he's 100% cash and he's going
right.
Then in that scenario, the studies have shown you don't pick up that much extra return even if you timed it correctly, which you're not going to. You're not going to get in exactly at the bottom of that and then ride it up to the top. You're better off putting most of the money to work. Now, if you feel like the market's near a top, if you look at the fundamentals and say, gosh, okay, it's a little bit overvalued, it's a little bit rich, okay, then maybe you don't put 100% of that cash to work all at once, but get that cash in, because what we have learned in our 20 years in the business, Dave, is that while you can sit there and say, wow, the market looks a little expensive today, it may get more expensive over the next 2 or 3 months. So you didn't do yourself any justice. And especially for retirees that have that lump sum, in many cases, the equities they're looking for are dividend payers. So if you're sitting on the sidelines and dollar cost averaging, you know what? All of that money is sitting in cash, which is earning next to nothing, and you're not collecting a dividend on those stocks you want to buy. So sometimes it's better off, go ahead and get it into those quality companies, those dividend payers. Mm-hmm. You sit there and you collect that dividend check every quarter while you wait for that market to take off over the long haul for you.
Well, I had a person that had a death claim, had a bunch of cash at once, needed it invested, needed it for income, and the way I described it to him is, let's get into this thing about waist deep right away. And then let's slowly wade into the rest of the pool and over the next 6 months or so that if we mistime it, if the market does tank on us, we have some opportunities to put some money at work. Rod, the financial markets have been, in the institutions, have been pretty creative in coming out with some products and tools that people can use to buy, to help manage some of the risk if they're worried about downside, things like buffer notes that protect some downside. You have annuities that can offer some income guarantees, or some cases where if the markets go down, you don't lose anything. I mean, obviously, everything you get, you give something up. Keep that in mind. If it sounds too good to be true, it isn't probably too good to be true. It is too good to be true, especially in our world, because you don't get anything for free. No protection is free. I described kind of one of these products recently to someone this way. I said, you have two cruise ships, and the cruise ships are identical in size. They're going to exact same ports, same menu, same everything. They're exactly the same. One of them costs $400 more than the other one. The only difference in that ship that costs $400 more is it has lifeboats. The other one has no lifeboats. So which one would you rather pick? And of course, a lot of people will say in our area of the woods, I'll take the one with lifeboats. I mean, I haven't heard of a cruise ship sinking since the Titanic, as far as I know, unless it's something out in the Southeast Pacific somewhere. I have no idea. So you're probably fine without the lifeboats, but people sometimes need that protection of the lifeboats, and that's what these products offer.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And once again, that comes down to your personal risk tolerance. If you're willing to take on the risk, you capture more of the reward when you take on more of the risk. So that's the other thing to keep in mind. And the last time I was on the show, we talked a little bit about this. Understand, the people that are marketing these products, they're going to make it sound really, really good. So if they're going to protect you and give you a lifeboat, you're not going to capture the full upside. But if you're a little bit scared, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with not capturing all of the upside if you're afraid. That's fine. That's what you should be doing.
It's been the Investment Show. Of course, you can catch it again on Saturday morning at 9 and always on WGCORadio.com. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you again next week. Doug Hughes will be live from Athens, Greece next Thursday. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.